Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Heck, the gang's all here. John Ramos is here. Ryan Music is here. Isaac Lohenkron hanging out as well. Glad to be with you for the next 3 hours. And I'm not trying to make light of a natural disaster, Aaron, by any means, but we've had earthquakes in Southern California, both on Thursday, Independence Day, 4th of July, and on Aaron's wedding day. Congratulations to Aaron Torres, who is now a happily married man 2 days in. But we also had an earthquake in Southern California on Friday, and then constant aftershocks afterwards. That's kind of what the NBA has been like over the last couple of days, because there was the big moves with the Clippers getting Kawhi Leonard and then acquiring Paul George, and then aftershocks all the way around.
Yeah, first of all, I will not be taking any credit for the earthquake on Friday. It was a fun wedding night, but not that fun.
Yeah.
But it was amazing today, even just in our pre-show meeting, the effects that the Kawhi Leonard, but also Paul George moves have on teams like the Thunder, teams like the Lakers, the teams like the Raptors. I mean, there are so many talking points. I don't know how we're going to get into everything in the 3 hours we have together, Dan.
Well, I want people to get in on the conversation if they can. I'm on Twitter at Dan Byer on Fox. If they want to find you on Twitter, you're going to have to listen closely, but they can reach you at
Aaron_Torres. I don't feel like they had to listen that closely.
Well, just to make sure they got the underscore part of it. That's what they needed to make sure that they got. And this is, it's funny because you spell it with two A's and one R, but our Fox Sports Radio account spells it with two R's. So they can't even get it right. Trust me, they will. They will. I don't know who this guy is, but his account was suspended.
Yeah.
The point being is, if you want to tweet Aaron, just do it the normal Aaron spelling way and throw the underscore in between Aaron and Torres, and you are good to go. The news came out Friday night for us here in Southern California, early Saturday for those pretty much around the country, that the LeBron James and the Lakers were going to lose out on Kawhi Leonard. And then it was the doubling up of Paul George going to Oklahoma City, and I was... In the simple fact of when I got the tweet, the first alert on my phone to not see Lakers, thank goodness. That was my thought of it. It didn't matter to me. I'm a Bucks fan, and it actually didn't matter to me if he was going back to the Raptors or not. I just did not want to see the Lakers because I didn't want to see one team dominate the NBA storyline throughout the season. Now that's not going to happen as Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are teaming up with the Clippers.
Yeah, like you. I mean, I was stunned by everything, how it came together, and obviously I was a little preoccupied at that point with, you know, stuff going on with the wedding, but...
With the whole marriage thing.
With the whole till death do us part thing, yeah. No, to see the Kawhi Clippers thing, okay, that's surprising, but maybe because I wasn't on my computer constantly refreshing, looking for more information, I got the Kawhi-Paul George tandem information from a friend at the wedding, which was shocking to me. So many reactions, but I don't disagree with you on what you said about the Lakers, Dan. I mean, we live here in Los Angeles, but we just came out of the super team era, and I know Lakers fans wanted Kawhi. I'm sure that it would have been a fun conversation going into next season, but with Kawhi going to the Clippers and teaming up with Paul George, I think we're now in a situation where we have 7, 8, 9, 10 teams that feel like they're right in the conversation going into next
year. And along with that, we have 7, 8, 9 stories. These are storylines that we will end up following throughout that NBA season, because it's not just going to be how does the big three or the big four, if you want to put Kyle Kuzma into that, if Kawhi would have gone there, how do the Lakers fare? And whether they win or lose, it was always a story. And I pinpointed to the fact when I was in over the weekend of it was very much like the 2016-2017 NBA season, when Kevin Durant went to Golden State for his first year, because we only had cared about 3 games during that regular season. That was the return to Oklahoma City for Durant, and then the 2 finals rematches, because we wanted to see how it was going to play out, and then we just waited for the NBA Finals. The playoffs weren't even of really great interest to us, because we just wanted to get to the NBA Finals where they would square off. you would have an NBA Finals, an NBA season, maybe just like we had with the NBA Finals that we just came off of, where the Raptors winning weren't even the biggest story in the NBA during those couple of weeks. Now it goes back to winning, and that's what I like. It's a story if the Clippers can win. It's a story if the Lakers win. It's a story if Golden State keeps on winning. And we can add, as you said, four or five teams to those sentences, and it all works out. And if you had Kawhi on the Lakers, it just would have been one ball of news, one ball of interest, and would have been atrocious in my mind for the NBA.
100%. I mean, you named some of them, but how about Houston? I mean, Houston has to feel, and I know they're trying to trade everybody, and Daryl Morey is making a headline a day this offseason, but Houston has to feel pretty good going into next season without the Warriors in their previous incarnation. Boston, I think, is interesting. I think everyone's sleeping on Boston with Kemba Walker, the leadership he's going to bring to that locker room. Maybe Jason Tatum makes the jump that we expect. Maybe Gordon Hayward's back close to full strength. Philadelphia is interesting. Brooklyn, at the very least, is going to be interesting with Kyrie Irving. By the way, the Thunder, the chess match of where does Russell Westbrook start next season? So even going into the season, it'll be fascinating. But then maybe Russell Westbrook adds another team that you think can get themselves into that conversation. I actually think this is great for the NBA. I think it's great for the networks. I think there's so many byproducts that it allows in the fact that now all of a sudden there are more teams that you have to watch without feeling like the Lakers are going to run away with it. Also, maybe the regular season starts to matter more again, that you have to play for seeding, things like that. Yeah. I think these are all real important things that are good for the NBA.
Yeah, the load management may have to be tightened up a bit now with Kawhi in the Western Conference, considering the games that he missed, 22 games with the Raptors this past season. I find it interesting from outside of Los Angeles, and with all apologies to John Ramos, who is a Lakers fan and I know wants nothing but the worst for the Los Angeles Clippers, but the sense I get around the NBA as well is that this was a game where they were cheering against the Lakers, in essence, to not get Kawhi. And whether the Raptors or Clippers came out with him, it didn't matter. That's why I said, like, heck, the Bucks now have a much more wide open Eastern Conference, but it seems that people were just wanting anything but Kawhi to team up, considering everything that Kawhi also just accomplished by himself.
Oh, 100%. And for me, that was part of it that I never understood with Kawhi, is you just proved that you're maybe the best basketball player on the planet right now. Now, you could still argue LeBron James, Kevin Durant pre-injury, but I never understood why he would want to go and play in the shadow of LeBron. And even if Kawhi was the best player on that team, he would have been in that shadow. To bring it back to your point, Dan, I think it's really interesting because I agree that fans just didn't want to see the Lakers get this guy. I also think there is a large portion of NBA fanship, maybe some of the younger viewers, that didn't want to see LeBron get this guy. It seems like, you know, LeBron is the guy that stuff always works out for him in the end. You know, he goes to Miami to join a super team. He comes to Cleveland. They immediately trade for Kevin Love. He gets Anthony Davis to L.A., and I think there's a lot of people that are just tired of, like, this guy manipulating everything behind the scenes. We saw what he did. I think although the Lakers had success early, he did a lot. He did a ton, as a matter of fact, to tear apart that locker room late in the season. I'm happy that he wasn't rewarded by just getting two out of the five best players in the league this offseason.
Seeing the graphics that we've seen a bunch over the weekend is the LA rivalry, the Clippers and the Lakers. And the Lakers will tell you, well, there is no rivalry. Like, we are the franchise. The Clippers don't have any titles. We've got 17 titles.
So real quick on that point, how long does that have to change? Because you know what's going to happen. Let's say the Clippers were to win the championship this year. Lakers fans would be 17-1, whatever, call us an 18-year, you know. But, like, I don't think that's applicable. I do think it's applicable. I think the two best teams on paper going into next season are both in Staples Center.
Well, that's interesting because I was going to bring up the point about the graphics that we see, that we've seen of the LA rivalry in what starting five is better, of the Lakers starting five that they would put together or the Clippers starting five that they would put together. And to me, I don't think it's close. Like, or as close as people, close enough to make it a tweet. Let's put it that way. Like, I think the Clippers, and when you're doing a starting five, it doesn't take into account what the Clippers have coming off the bench, where they have Lou Williams. Like, I think that the Clippers are just a much better team than the Lakers right now. And when I see that graphic, I kind of laugh, and I still see, you know, you mentioned load management. LeBron's going to have to deal with that. Anthony Davis has never really stayed healthy in his career. So there's a lot with that. I don't think it's as even as people want to make it seem. And well, you got a new coach coming in with the Lakers as well.
And I was going to say, too, and I think this is the nature of sports fans, is you see the names on the Lakers, Boogie Cousins, former NBA All-Star. Well, we watched Boogie in the finals. He struggled. He's not close to 100%. He got re-injured in the playoffs. There's a reason he only got a one-year deal worth $2.5 million. Rajon Rondo is significantly on the back end of his career. Now, I like some of the moves, Danny Green, etc., but I think the casual NBA fan doesn't realize how good, say, a Montrezl Harrell is and can be playing with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, how important a Patrick Beverley is, Lou Williams, guys like that. So the Lakers have the old name brand recognition, but the Clippers have a lot of the younger guys that have had more impact of late.
I look at the Clippers, and it's easy to say, all right, well, you've got Kawhi, you can match him up with LeBron. You've got Paul George, well, they've got Anthony Davis, and try to do these one-for-one things. As I said, it doesn't work with the bench, but you just brought up a couple of names. Patrick Beverley, who gets after it on defense. We know how good Paul George is on defense. We know what Kawhi Leonard does on defense. I don't see any defensive stoppers in that Lakers lineup. Like, the Clippers' defense is going to be insane next season with the amount of great defensive players that they have.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm saying with the Lakers, is I feel like, and we're going to have all show to get into all this stuff, I felt like the Lakers... I don't know if they panicked or what, but it just feels like they kind of did the same thing they did last year. They signed a bunch of veteran guys that don't really fit. The puzzle pieces aren't great. If you want to talk about Rondo, okay, whatever. But, you know, I look at Boogie Cousins isn't the Boogie Cousins of 3 or 4 years ago. I know he played with Anthony Davis. I know he's a former All-Star, but he's not the same player. KCP, we see how little value that guy has, you know? And so, to me, it felt a little desperation-ish, but it also felt a lot like we see from teams when they have a veteran like LeBron, whatever, is you start to build around veteran guys that are really, frankly, living off name recognition only.
I thought the Lakers this offseason, and this was my issue with them, was it was just easy for them to throw money at people and look like they did something.
Yep, agreed.
And didn't think about chemistry, didn't think about who would be of value, and then they end up missing on Kawhi, and then just end up signing all of these guys that make you think, wow, look at what we've got together. Doesn't seem that there was tons of scouting, tons of thoughts of how is this going to work chemistry-wise. I mean, the news that Isaac just mentioned, and we're going to talk with Chris Haynes a little bit about it because he broke the news. Now LeBron all of a sudden is your point guard. Wouldn't that have been the plan, like at the start of the offseason or the start of trying to figure that out, or at least after you made the Anthony Davis trade? I find all of that interesting because the Lakers are seemingly trying to figure it out as they go.
100%. And to me, Rob Pelinka has been a lightning rod throughout this offseason. Anthony Davis was on a platter for him. He had to give up a lot. I wasn't very impressed with anything that happened other than the Anthony Davis stuff, which, let's be honest, was really kind of a Rich Paul kind of deal.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joining us now to talk about the breaking news that occurred over the weekend and the, heck, it was supposed to be a four-day holiday and everybody ends up working because of Kawhi Leonard. He also broke the news just a few minutes ago about LeBron James's status in the Lakers starting lineup. Our good friend from Yahoo Sports covering the NBA, Chris Haynes, joins us now on Fox Sports Radio. I know your weekend probably wasn't what it was hopingly planning to be, Chris, but I want to start out with the latest news that you put out. How long was this in the works that LeBron James is going to be running the point now for the Lakers?
Well, I think if you look at the roster construction, and they resigned Rajon Rondo. They brought in Quinn Cook, who I think is going to do a serviceable job, play with the Warriors, catch and shoot player. Then they Alex Caruso, he's back. But the team still, as of right now, in my opinion, I think still lacks a little bit of sniper depth. They got Danny Green. They got, is it Reggie? Because they have Reggie on the squad. But so to maximize this roster, Troy Daniels. And so to maximize this roster, I think the Lakers I've been told by sources are looking at starting LeBron James at the point guard spot. You know, try to surround him in as much shoes as possible. But if you look at just far as the floor general spot and how the league is pretty much point guard driven, it pretty much makes sense to kind of put the ball in his hands and let him go from here on out. So it's kind of be the new Showtime 2.0, as you will, a 6'8 guy running the point and making things happen. So I think they're going to just see how this starts off initially.
I want to go back to Friday night and last week as a whole, because the whole dynamic with the Clippers fascinates me. You spend your year talking with people across the league, and there was always talk that Kawhi could go to the Clippers. When, if any, did you have any indication that Paul George was not only on the trading block, but then, of course, that the Clippers had a chance to get him?
I was not aware that the Clippers were the primary target of Kawhi. And then secondly, no, I was not aware until news got out that Paul George is on their radar. Kawhi Leonard and his camp, Uncle Dennis Robinson, they did a great job in keeping things in the house, because I think the teams were made aware that if anything leaked from this process, the free agency process, that it was a great chance that, you know, that they will be eliminated.
Chris, Chris Haynes joining us here on Fox Sports Radio, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Beyer. Can you take us through what life is like for an NBA insider when you get that information that Kawhi is going to be a Clipper?
So this was Friday. So I had left summer league, came to my hotel. I was in bed. This was around 10:45. So sure. I was in bed just going to doze off for a little bit. Then, I'm not going to reveal my source on this one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got a text saying to the L.A. No, I got a text saying, hold on, let me read this thing back. I got a text saying Los Angeles Clippers.
And that's it? That's all the text said?
Hold on. That's it. But check this out. So all we've been hearing from everybody else, all these reporters, the bloggers, whoever you want to listen to, was that it was the Lakers, and if not, it was the Raptors. We didn't hear one peep out of the Clippers. And so this is a source that, you know, I trust heavily. And so I didn't run with it after that. I text back. Hold on. Kawhi is going with the Clippers? I want to make sure, because we haven't been hearing the Clippers. And he's like, yes. And I said, okay, I can report now. He said, go. And then that was it. That was history. So that was about 10:45, 11. You know, that broke, turned the basketball world upside down. And then probably 5-10 minutes later, news of Paul George got out. And so that was just a heck of a crazy. But to answer your question, just free agency, especially for, you know, most of the top news breakers, you're not sleeping very much, especially the first 3-4 days of free agency. You know, we're breaking news 2-3 in the morning, so you just have to be ready and be on guard. So I'm just glad, you know, Kawhi's thing lasted 5 days, almost six. I'm just glad it's over with now, I tell you that. So that's kind of a little glimpse into a life of free agency right now.
First of all, I like the part about you saying you wanted to just doze off for a little bit, implying there was more going on in Vegas that night. But
a nap at 10:45 at night, yeah, in Vegas is always necessary.
Listen, we've all been there. But I want to actually go back to Kawhi for a second, because what you said to me is so interesting, you know, about if leaks come out, you know, this is off, or you're not going to be involved with me going forward. How much does all of this being orchestrated behind the scenes actually say about Kawhi? Because he's built this reputation of, you know, he's quiet, he never says anything, and there he is masterminding, I think, one of the most shocking trades I can ever remember in recent sports history.
Well, look, I mean, that's what happened. When you're a superstar in this league, you have tremendous pull. You have tremendous power and clout. And, you know, he wanted another star alongside of him. And the Clippers, you have to remember, Clippers for about 2 years have been on the sidelines just at every single game of Kawhi Leonard. You know, just making sure they're in position. Maybe wherever Kawhi, there's a Clipper official right there, just standing. You know, I'm being dramatic, but you know, you get the point.
Sure.
And so they put a tremendous amount of effort and resources into bringing this guy in. So then, if Kawhi, if all he's saying is you got to bring another star here. You know, you see what they gave up. They gave up a treasure trove of assets and picks to bring it, to get Paul George in. So they were like, okay, we finally, because you have to remember, this is the Clippers here. They, rarely do they have big-time free agents choose to come there and not the Lakers. And it's not the Lakers. It's not like the Lakers are in a down year. I mean, they got LeBron and AD. And so they look at it, well, we have this opportunity. We got to go all in because we've been doing, you know, we've been investigating for 2 years on this guy. And so that's what it's about. You know, when you have the leverage of Anthony Davis, look what happened with Anthony Davis. Same with him. He wanted to be with the Lakers. He ended up getting his way. You know, if you have leverage, those star players, you have leverage. You have tremendous power and will to get what you want. Look at Paul George, for God's sakes. I mean, he just signed an extension. You know, yeah. one year into his extension, and he gets to the team that he wants to go to. Like, teams usually don't make big trades like that in conference. So, you know, it was some wild stuff that was going on, and but it just shows you, you know, when you're a superstar in your prime, you can pretty much make anything happen.
Chris Haynes joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Byer sitting in for Doug Gottlieb today. I do want to ask you about the Oklahoma City portion of this, but I know you were kind of joking, but were the Clippers sending people to Raptors games to make sure that Kawhi knew that they were following him?
Well, they said they did. They did. Well, I don't know to make sure they knew they were following him, but they knew. I mean, you know,
sure.
We were right about that all year.
Okay.
They did it for Kevin Durant as well.
Okay.
Had him at. They were the most aggressive team throughout the season, and just making sure there was a team official there at all times. Now, you know, obviously they're not supposed to be talking to him or engaging with him at, you know, at any point, but you know, these players, they know. You know,
yeah.
The league, it may seem big to a lot of people, but once you get to know everybody, like, the players know who such and such is or where such and such is from, and so you know, they invested a ton of resources to secure a meeting. And, I mean, look, Kawhi wanted to come to LA. He wanted to be home. But, you know, just think about the fact that they beat out the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron and AD. It just shows you the transformation of that franchise and where they're going now, and just how the, you know, this is not the Donald Sterling era anymore. You know, this is a respected organization, and that people feel like the franchise is headed in the right direction, and players know that and understand that. So this, you got to get a major prize, not only to be able to secure a meeting, to convince him to come there and going all out to secure another star alongside of him. Now, right now, we're going to have a battle of L.A. for the next couple of years.
And you just referenced something. Does this say anything about LeBron? And I'm not implying it does, but for years, you know, Dwayne Wade takes a back seat for him to come to Miami. Chris Bosh, Kevin Love is more than happy to join in kind of a third role. Even Anthony Davis this summer. But, you know, Kawhi was that last big puzzle piece that really puts him over the top. Maybe it says more about Kawhi wanting to do his own thing. Is there any, I don't want to say blood on LeBron's hands here because that's a bad analogy, but, like, is there anything here that we need to say about LeBron? Maybe the fact that, is he losing any leverage as kind of that guy that everybody in the league wants to play with?
No, I don't think so. And I think it says more about Kawhi. He's a different cat. He's a different cat. To any other star player, this would have been appealing. To play with the Lakers, the dynasty, the franchise, the culture that they have. You got Anthony Davis over there, LeBron James. And then, like, it's not like, because typically when an NBA team already has superstars, two superstars, and they're recruiting another one, typically that one has to come in and take a pay cut. There was not going to be a pay cut. There was a max slot available. This just speaks to Kawhi. You know, he's not one to jump on super teams or create a super team. He wants to be happy, and he wants to be content, and it's all about trust. That's why it was so important that leaks didn't get out. And if you look at throughout the process, the only leaks that happened were with the Lakers, and I know Magic Johnson is not a member of the Lakers, but, you know, he went on record talking about what exactly he said to Kawhi in the meeting. And then you look at Toronto, it was like an O.J. chase over there where they, you know, following the helicopter he was on. And it was the O.J. without the crime, absent of the crime, you know, following his car. But you didn't hear a peep from the Clippers. And I think that spoke volume. And one more thing I want to add too, guys, is that Kawhi has pretty much been sheltered throughout his NBA career. In San Antonio, he wasn't asked to do much as far as media responsibility, talking. You know, he was kept under the radar. The Spurs, they don't, you know, the Spurs players aren't that accessible to media. Same with Toronto. He went over there. It was similar. We heard a lot from him more in Toronto, but still relatively to, like, the Golden States, the more friendly, media-friendly organizations, he was kept quiet. And so just think about playing for the Lakers and, you know, them going on a five-game losing streak with that team and that roster. And, you know, LeBron James, you know, the media follows him. You know, it would have been something he's just not accustomed to. Now, he's going to get a lot more of that with the Clippers. But still, it'll be a lot less than had he gone to the Lakers.
Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Beyer. I want to wrap up with this. How much do you think Sam Presti was looking ahead to shaking up Oklahoma City prior to Paul George wanting that trade demand? And now where they are.
Well, not shaking up as is. He couldn't have been thinking about shaking up the core. Well, I mean, the core is just those two, Russ and Paul George. You know, Paul just signed an extension. He was 1 year into that extension, so you can't be looking to do anything. You would think just tweaking. First of all, they need shooters. That's what they needed. That's what exposed them in the playoffs and why they got bounced in the first round of Portland. But this was a shock to the franchise. They were not looking to do anything like this drastic, and now they're in a position where they have to entertain overtures for Russell Westbrook. So, if anything, you know, I'm not trying to bash Russ in this situation or Paul, even though that was bold of Paul to request a trade. Like I said, a year into an extension, but you know, the roster wasn't assembled right. They needed shooters around. Those two guys, especially in this league right now, with shooting at a premium, you need that at a high level to be able to advance in this league. And they just didn't have it. You know, they didn't have the personnel to get it done.
Find him on Twitter at Chris B. Haynes, senior NBA writer, joining us at Fox Sports Radio. Chris Haynes, thank you so much. Hopefully you can actually get some regular naps and not at 11 o'clock at there night as things start to slow down. But we appreciate the time, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, take care, my guys.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I have to think that the city of Toronto and the Raptors fans really weren't ready for reality, because you try to talk yourself into being okay with Kawhi leaving. And you try to say, well, hey, as long as he gives us one title, we'll be fine. Well, you know, if you just come here for a year and win a title, we're good. But now, being in the thick of it, being one of those three teams that were in the race for Kawhi's services, I just now think that when you're a fan of the Raptors, it stings a little bit more than you thought that it would. You thought you would be okay with it. Maybe this breakup, you know, you didn't like her that much, and all of a sudden she's gone, and you're like, wait a second, I guess I missed her more than I did. That's how I feel the Toronto Raptors are dealing with the Kawhi Leonard situation.
Well, and to use the breakup analogy, it's like the seven stages of a breakup or the seven stages of grief or whatever. I think because of the way it happened, it's got to sting more, right? Like, even during the finals and during the finals run, it was like, well, even if they lose, or even if they win, he still might not come back, and you're accepting it in that moment. Then you win the championship. Then there's the parade. Then there's a million leaks, and he signs with a charter company out of Toronto, and maybe you think, and then the Clippers are supposedly out, and then you start to think, well, if he wanted to sign with the Lakers, why isn't he doing it? And everything was, I felt like, kind of setting up for the return to Toronto. And so I think what you said is the big thing is there were guys like Kevin Durant this year, right? There were reports for months that he was going to be gone. 6 o'clock or, you know, whatever, 6 o'clock Eastern time on July 1st, he was gone. Kyrie Irving was gone. Mm-hmm. And Kawhi, as it went on, as a Raptors fan, he had to feel like, okay, this thing may happen, and it just didn't.
Kind of dragging it, just hoping that maybe each day meant better and better, which I actually thought that it did. I had picked the Clippers at the beginning of a free agency, and then as you do shows and you have it go on and on, I thought, wow, this is a really good sign for the Raptors, but it stings. To use a Vegas reference, I was telling you guys before the show, it's like if you're up $500 at the casino, but then you stick around for another hour and you end up leaving plus 150, like up $150, yeah, you're happy, but then you're mad that you stuck around, that you lost that 350 because it's all what you could have had. And that's what I think Toronto, like, they were like, oh, hey, we got the one title. If he wants to leave then good. Good for him. And now that they know that he's not going to be there, I just think it stings a lot more than they realized it would.
And that's exactly what it's because of the way it played out. If you hear for months that he could leave even if you win a championship, and it happens at 6 o'clock Eastern on that first day of free agency, or if Woj breaks the news a couple hours in advance like he did with Kevin Durant, you're like, okay. It was never going to happen. There was nothing we could have done different. Let's enjoy it. But as Chris Haynes alluded to in the last segment, I mean, we had Chopper Cam 4000, you know, following cars that may or may not have held Kawhi Leonard. We had people showing up at buildings that may or may not have held meetings for Kawhi Leonard. And you have a full week where there is no news, and sometimes no news is good news. And then for it to break the way that it did, frankly, probably when most people in Toronto were asleep, just insane how it all played out.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
It's now our honor to welcome to the program former baseball commissioner, Hall of Famer, and now author of the book For the Good of the Game, Bud Selig, joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Bud, thanks so much for taking the time today. I want to start off, what is life like being a Hall of Famer and no longer being the commissioner of baseball?
They've been really good, very eventful. I started teaching, so I'm teaching at three universities, and of course now I've written a book, and so I've kept extremely busy.
All-Star Week, obviously, so much going on. It's kind of one of the culminations of the sport. You know, how much do you enjoy this week with the Derby, with all the best players in the sport getting together for a couple of days?
I enjoy it immensely. We were in Washington last year during the All-Star Game, and enjoyed it. And of course, this week I'm on book tours. But I'll be watching the Home Run Derby tonight and the All-Star Game tomorrow night.
Now, there have been a lot of home runs in Major League Baseball. It's been one of the topics. Is this an issue? We always hear, are home runs good for baseball? It's just a home run or a strikeout. Do you see this being a big issue in today's game, where it seems to be all or nothing at the plate?
I know people have made a lot of it, but let me just say this to you. Having been in this sport a long time, the last 55 plus years, I've seen where we had to tinker with the mound. We had to bring the designated hitter in because they weren't hitting enough. They weren't scoring enough. So you go through, in the evolution of anything, you go through all these things. And I'm not, this is unusual. But I'm not. I'm really not concerned about it. I have faith Rob Manfred and all of his people will look at this and they'll do whatever they have to do.
And that's kind of to follow up on that point. Do you feel like sports are just cyclical, having been around them? Because one thing that kind of stood out to me from the book is people were saying, you know, back in the 70s and 80s when Pete Rozelle was the commissioner of the NFL, oh, the NFL and Major League Baseball is taking a hit. Yet here we are 30, 40 years later, we're hearing the same conversations. The sport continues to go on strong.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I tell the story and I just 40 seconds to tell it. In 1958, there was a sports editor in Milwaukee who went to the Associated Press sports editors in Dallas and announced baseball was moribund, that the younger generation wouldn't accept it, it was too slow, it was all this, it was that. And so I've listened to this stuff for 60 years, 62 years, and the gross revenues are now $13, $14 billion in that area. Stunning. We're doing remarkably well. Of course, there are always problems. You're going to have that in every sport and in every era. But overall, I'm satisfied where we are.
Former Commissioner Bud Selig joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's the author of the book For the Good of the Game, the inside story of the surprising and dramatic transformation of Major League Baseball. One of the big changes under your watch for a while was the change for the All-Star Game and home field advantage. Take us back to that night in Milwaukee in 2002 when the game ended up in a tie. When did you kind of sense that, we could be going down a bad road here?
Well, it's interesting, and I'll tell you about that. But, you know, we made a change, but we had discussed, I'll give the Fox people a lot of credit and everybody around it. We knew we had to make a change. Look, baseball has the best All-Star Game. But you could sense in the last 5 or 10 years before that that the players didn't want to play, or if they did, they wanted to get out after the third inning, as opposed to the way it was in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and even 80s. And so the tie was unfortunate. You asked when I sensed it. Well, in the seventh inning, my friend Joe Torre, who I've known since he was 15 years old, made a change. And I remember saying to my wife at that time, I hope he knows what he's doing, because he brought in Barry Zito for one hitter. And Sandy Alderson, who at that time was running our baseball operation for baseball, said to me in the eighth inning, I'm concerned. So was I. And let's call it as it is. The managers, and they both, Bob Brenly and Joe Torre would tell us, ran out of pitchers. And but we had already decided to make a change. I want to make that point to you. We had already decided to make the change. And so we did. And the next year, sure enough, every player stayed all in the top step of their dugout. It went right. The game went right to the end. Ball caught at the wall. So we achieved what we did. But I'll tell you, we already were going to make the change. And I remember talking to two people about a week before. One was Ron Santo, who I called to see how he was. Ronnie was not well. And the other was my friend Henry Aaron. They both loved the rule change. And they both talked about what it meant back in the 60s and 70s to play in an all-star game. And that's what we restored. And I think we've restored that. I really do, through various devices. So the tie in Milwaukee had zero to do with what happened.
And that's what I was going to say next. So to be clear, if the NL had won 11-2 that night, the change was still coming for the following year?
Oh, it was coming no matter what, yes. Yeah, the problem was deeper than that. Oh, there's no question about that.
Commissioner Bud Selig joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Now we can call him a Hall of Famer. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Byer, sitting in for Doug Gottlieb today. One of your changes in baseball when you were commissioner was profit sharing. Owned a small market team in the Milwaukee Brewers. Would that have come about if you didn't have that experience of being a Milwaukee resident and owning a small market team? Does that change?
I think it would have. There's no question about it. I know some people wanted to make that case, but look, we had the same economic system, guys, that we had had since the 30s. I used to call it the Ebbets Field Polo Grounds days. For anybody who doesn't know, those are the two New York ballparks back then. There had been no change made. The game had changed. So revenue sharing, which obviously the two of the other sports and then all three had, was fair. Look, what is the object of this? The object is to provide as much competition, equity. I call it hope and faith. They were my two favorite words. Hope and faith is what we're to provide. So that as many teams on March 28th, which was opening day this year, felt that they had a realistic chance to win. That was important to me. And so I think revenue sharing has worked out just better than anybody could have ever expected. And the fact of the matter is it's brought a lot of hope and faith to a lot of places, including, by the way, right now.
And I was going to kind of follow up on that, because one of the interesting talking points, it's not directly correlated, but you talk about a small market franchise, Tampa Bay, obviously looking into all sorts of alternatives, potentially playing half their season in Montreal. I know there's some kind of logistical issues with contracts and stadiums and all that stuff, but what do you kind of make of that story, which has kind of become a big talking point the last couple of weeks?
Well, I don't have the details, so I'm going to let Rob Manfred and other people determine that. I understand. What I know is what I've read, and I have talked to a lot of people, including the commissioner about it. But I'll, let's get all the facts and details on all sides. Then we'll be able to make a better judgment.
Bud Selig,
you are right, though. It does have a lot of logistical problems.
Bud Selig, the author for The Good of the Game book, comes out tomorrow. Of course, former baseball commissioner, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. What do you miss more, being a baseball owner or being baseball's commissioner?
I'm still a fan. I was always a fan,
sure,
as everybody in the world knows. I watch a lot of games, sometimes all 15 of them in one form or another. And keep in touch with a lot of people. So I've enjoyed the last 4 or 5 years a lot. And I'm teaching now, and And as I said, but I've stayed close to the game, and I really enjoy it.
Last one for me, Bud. You kind of referenced this earlier, but in the book, you do talk about your relationship with Joe Torre, and it started, I believe, you were friends with his older brother. Didn't you have to babysit him or watch Joe Torre when something
well,
to that effect?
Well, you know, he and I kid about that. Yes, Frank Torre and Don McMahon were my two best friends that I met right off the bat in baseball. And one time, the Milwaukee Braves were going on a East Coast trip, and Frank said to me, you know, I'm going to leave my little brother here. He was worried about him. He didn't have to worry, but he was 15. Would you take care of him? And I did. And that was 1958.
He didn't wreck the house? He didn't do anything bad that got you in trouble?
No, he did not. He was good. He was really good.
Amazing. Aaron Torres, I'm Dan Byer. Wrap up with this. You mentioned your good friend, Hank Aaron, a great friend, Hank Aaron. Is that what bothered you so much during the Bonds home run stuff, was the friendship that you had with Hank Aaron?
You know, it really didn't. Obviously, Henry and I talked a lot during that. We talk a lot all the time, and it didn't. It just, look, I've often said baseball is a social institution with a lot of responsibilities, and I'm proud of what we did on the steroid thing. We cleaned it up to a point where today baseball has the toughest testing program, not only in sports, but in the U.S. as WADA, World Anti-Doping Association, people will tell you. But I was concerned about the effect of the game and how some people reacted, and it really didn't have anything to do with Henry's record, although a lot of people thought so because of our relationship.
He's Bud Selig. Again, the book For the Good of the Game comes out tomorrow. You can find it pretty much everywhere, online and in bookstores as well. Commissioner, we appreciate it. Hall of Famer, we appreciate it. Thanks so much, and we hope to chat again soon.
Thanks, Rock. It's been a pleasure to be with you.